and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for listening tonight. Tonight we have with us a special guest and a really good friend of mine, PMH Atwater. And we're going to talk about her new book, Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness. And as most of you know, my show is a really scientific show. You know, I'm kind of a black and white person. And I always try to find something that whoever comes on my show has to be, you know, black and white. This is not a black and white topic, but I know that it's true because my children are one of these children. My children have all of these attributes, and I can see how different they are from me and how different they are from many of the other people in the world. And so, to me, this show fits my format just perfectly because I know that it is because my children live it. So welcome, PMH. How are you?
Well, I'm fine.
So I had to say that about this book because people know me on my show. You know, my format's so rigid. And this is a topic that you can't really see, you know. And I don't have a lot of topics that you can't really see, but I know this one's true because my kids, I mean, it's like you wrote this book about my kids. In fact, my child is in this book.
Well, yes, and there is a lot of data. There is a lot of research. There is a lot of science in this book, as well as prophecy and mysticism and spirituality and the esoteric traditions, because you've got to look at all of it if you're going to understand genetics and evolution.
So I have one. Well, let me introduce, get you introduced first, then I want to ask you a question. Don't let me forget to ask about the eyes. Tell us who you are, what you do, why you do what you do, and where we can find you.
Okay, that's a big statement. So my name is PMH Atwater, and yes, those initials really are my name. My initials don't stand for a thing. I've been a near-death researcher for over three decades. I'm one of the original in the field. My work is up there with Raymond Moody and all the rest of them. I've written 10 books on my findings. Some of my work has been upheld and verified in clinical studies, including the Dutch study that made it into Lancet in December 15, 2001. So I'm in Lancet. So I'm no psychic on the block, although I have a lot of respect for this sort of thing, and I do know that we can establish that type of intuition and how it works and how good it is. Yes, we can. But my world has been near-death studies. And during the process of work, I work with adults as well as children, and what I'm noticing with children who have near-death experiences, when they come back, they exhibit the same physiological and psychological change pattern or after effects that adults do. Of course, they go through those after effects a little bit differently. So I'm looking at these very definitive kinds of changes that experiencers go through, especially the physiological ones, where you've got changes in brain structure, brain function, the nervous system, the digestive system, skin sensitivity. And I'm looking at how these children go through this and deal with this as they grow. And I'm finding that, oh, wait a minute here, whoops. Children being born now match near-death kids. And certainly as a near-death researcher, I'm going, oh, now wait a minute here, folks, I've got to look at this. So I've been doing this for several decades. The first book I wrote about this was The New Children and Near-Death Experiences. It's a very in-depth look and research at children who have near-death experiences, including toddlers. A child can have a near-death experience in the birth canal while they are being born. So, you know, I'm really digging deep in that book, and I'm beginning in that book to link the whoops factor, and the whoops factor to me is, wait a minute, folks, is this happening to children who have not had a near-death experience? They're just being born this way. The second book was Beyond the Indigo Children. It was kind of like an expose where I'm showing that labels like indigo and crystal and rainbow and starseed and all of these popular labels that are being used actually do more harm than good. They're very misleading. They're exaggerated, and I showed why and how, and then begin to get very much into the fact that you can take the characteristics all these labels supposedly defined, and you can bunch together all of those characteristics, and you have the pattern of the new kids. So, you know, toss the labels, let's look at what's really there, which I did in that book. And then it became very clear to me that I needed to go much, much deeper. And so I did that with children of the fifth world. It's surprising everybody who reads it. I go very deeply, not only into the kids we have now, but the patterns that have been ongoing for a long time, eons of time, in fact. So we're looking at the patterns of DNA. We're looking at the gene pool. We're taking a big look at haplotypes and blood types, and well, haplotypes are blood types, and taking even a broader look at drugs and sex and money. We're looking at education. We're looking at politics and business and jobs. But we're also looking even broader at what's happening in the world today, how the children sort of dip into that, you know, what they're doing and timelines, datelines. So Children of the Fifth World is a very, very thorough study of all kinds of ways of viewing what is happening now in the human family.
So did I miss something? Did you say something about blood?
Yeah, blood types. I discussed blood types in the book, too, or haplotypes.
Well, let me ask you this question about the odds first, because that blood type thing really interested me. So I want to make sure we talk about that. But the green eyes on the front of the book, one thing that I've noticed about people with that color of eyes is that they're typically very old souls. And depending on, and I don't know if this makes any sense, it's not how the eyes look, it's how they look through the eyes. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I wouldn't say that it's just green-eyed children, but you certainly noticed the children with that color eyes.
I have a son with blue eyes that I know is awake, but he doesn't want to recognize he's awake. But a lot of my daughter, myself, and several other people that I know that have that particular color of green eyes, not only are they awake, but they really, really know it. So I've kind of done some studying about it over the past 10 years, and I find that quite frequently. So I wondered, had you noticed that?
Well, you're going to find it kind of funny how the little girl wound up with green eyes. She had really dark, deep blue eyes. And that's the way the publisher made it. And I just absolutely screamed in horror, and I said, look, that's racism. You cannot have, a light-skinned child with blonde hair and blue eyes. That's what Hitler wanted, the perfect race. That's racism. I said, you know, why don't you put a little Arab boy in there and do this, do that, and the other? And they said, you know, maybe we could make the child have green eyes. Would that be okay? And I said, well, yeah, anything but blue.
Interesting.
So they made green eyes.
But I've really spent a lot of time looking at that over the last 10 years because I kept finding it over and over and over, and so I started paying
attention. Isn't it wonderful that it went, that child wound up in, with blue eyes because I complained about racism?
So talk to us about blood, because most people have never heard any connection about that. And I think it's fascinating.
Well, it is.
And let me tell you one thing before you get started that I hadn't told you before. I flew up to Canada last fall and spent a week with Gaston Nassens. Do you know who that is?
No.
Well, he developed this microscope called the Somatid microscope, and he can see blood down to a level that other microscopes can't see.
Oh,
literally down to the somatids inside the cells. And so when I went to see him, there was probably about maybe 10 people there at this little mini conference he had at his home. And he gave us all a tour of his laboratory and showed us his microscope. And he took several of our bloods and put it under this microscope and brought it up onto this big screen. And when he did my blood, and I don't know what to say about this, there were these stars. And it was a five-pointed star that looked like a Star of David in my blood. It wasn't a drawn outline. It looked like a star, but with distinct 5 points. And I said, what is that, Gaston? And he said, you know, and anybody that doesn't know him, he also developed 714X. So the Somatid microscope and this product 714X that restores your immune system. It's amazing. But anyway, so he said, you know, Eva, I don't know what it is, but I've been finding it more and more in the past 5 years. And before 5 years ago, I never saw that in the blood before, so I don't know what it is. Well, I know what it is. It's people waking up. So anyway, go ahead and talk about your blood finding. Isn't that amazing, though?
Yeah, it is amazing. And it is amazing what they're finding now with blood types. They're able to trace certainly the movements and the growth and the evolution of the human being. And what they're finding is that the migrations, the various evolutionary patterns of human beings aren't what they thought they were. And it's really turning a lot of our history up on its ear. Like, for instance, there's a number of people, black people, who've had their blood tested and find out that none of it goes back to Africa. And they're just in a state of shock. And so, you know, we're getting this kind of topsy-turvy thing. But what really interests me with the haplotypes, some of the things they're finding, for instance, is if you're Scottish, 9 chances out of 10 you're Egyptian as well, because a lot of Egyptians with, you know, Princess Scotta settled in especially northern Scotland. So you've got that blood type now, the Egyptian in Scotland. So we've got a lot of this, you know, stuff that they're now discovering. But what really excites me is the X haplotype. They cannot trace the X haplotype to any other place on the planet.
Now, PMH, assume that my listeners have no idea what you're talking about, so please say what that is. The best you can, anyway.
You go in and get your blood type traced in these incredible microscopes like you were talking about when they took your blood and they studied it and they saw all these stars. Okay, they're taking people's blood You can have this done. I think it costs like maybe $150. You send off to a specific place with samples of your blood type, and they'll trace it. They'll find out your lineage, your people, what country you came from, what race you're really a part of. And in other words, they can tell a lot about you and your history from just your blood. So,
who is they? What lab does this, in case someone wants to?
There's various ones. I'm not sure that I can give you a specific lab. If you want to trace back to Newsweek magazine, February 6, 2006, that's a ways back, but they had a huge, big, in-depth study on haplotypes in Newsweek magazine, February 6, 2006. So if you want references, go back there. They've got a lot of labs. They've got a lot of scientists talking in that particular article on DNA testing through the bloodlines. And in doing that, the X haplotype doesn't trace anywhere. Almost all of your blood types will trace back to various evolutionary periods in our history as human beings on this planet. X does not. They can't trace it to any other place on the planet. And the people who have the most of this type are your Basque people, your Berbers, the Great Lakes Mound Builders, the Algonquins, the Yakima, Sioux, the Picts. We're talking about Iranians here, some of the Egyptians. And if you go to the readings of the psychic Edgar Cayce, and I know this might put your hair, stand up your hair on end, but if you go back to his readings, he said that when Atlantis sunk, the survivors went to these various places, and he named all of the places where we're now finding a predominance of the X haplotype. And it's one of those kind of woo-woo things, but there's science behind it.
That's very interesting. So tell us, and forgive me for a moment if I get distracted, but I suddenly smell smoke all in my house.
Uh-oh.
So I've been walking around trying to find it. But anyway, could you tell us a little bit how these children are different and how you know it when you see them?
How do we know these children are different?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, with my own daughter, she feels like she doesn't fit in.
Well, right, they don't.
And
I can give you the pluses and minuses.
She did radical things because she didn't have friends that were like her. And so tell a parent how they can know if this is their child.
Okay, let me give you the pluses and the minuses.
Yeah, and what do they do? These child needs special parenting. So what do they do?
These children are very intelligent, even if flunking and can't spell in school. Don't let that fool you. About one-third are geniuses, even if learning disabled. They are highly music-oriented and very rhythmic. They are unusually creative and spiritually minded. They're very intuitive and psychic. Many can remember past lives. They're excellent with math. Don't let them fool you about this either. They're natural healers. They're ready-to-go entrepreneurs. They're irreverent. They're quirky. They have unique beliefs. They're visionary problem solvers. They're very knowing. They're volunteer-minded. They're natural humanitarians. They're groupies who move as if part of a collective. They often attend night school in addition to dreaming. They abstract at very young ages. They're spatial learners. They're a fusion. They believe in the fusion of sexes and gender mixing. They're multi-sensory, multi-channelers who live in a multiverse. That's the pluses. If you want to look at the minuses, they're impulsive and impatient. These are the quick-click kids. They feel entitled. Many feel overconfident. because they are the ultimate consumers. There's an underlying anger in these kids because they have little tolerance for lies and manipulation. They can't handle that stuff. They prefer the astral and synthetic worlds. They're highly sensitive to drugs, snack foods, processed foods, and any type of incoherent electronic energy. And we're talking here about the digital world. They do not assimilate nutrition well, even if it's organic. They have no concept of authority. They need mentors, not bosses. They appear wiser than they really are. Self-deception is a big issue. They're sensitive to trickster energies and possession. They do not understand the effort needed to process or refine or get copyrights or get degrees. They expect things to come to them. They do not recognize boundaries, even that of skin. Their greatest fear, for most of them, is silence. So these are very unusual children. They often know more than the parents do. They certainly know more than the their school teachers do. And, you know, one of the reasons why they're not interested in refining their skills or going on to college or getting a degree or going into getting anything copyrighted, it's like, why should they bother? They already know it. So, it's you really have to work with them to get them interested in really digging down because they already have it. Why bother? These are very quirky kids.
So there was something in your book that I had never thought about before in my entire life, and that is planned birth.
My God,
how much sense does that make? Could you talk about that a little bit, please?
Well, to me, that's a womb issue, and that's a really big one. A lot of doctors now are requesting that the birth occurred a certain time because maybe they're going to go out on vacation, or the parents will request that the birth occur at a certain time because they're going to go out on vacation, or maybe in China, you know, they have it at a certain a time that's more successful. So they're watching all of these energies and myths and symbols and desires and preferences. So they're having these kids by cesarean during these special times rather than waiting for the child to be born at the child's special time. And when they do that, a couple of things happen. One of them has to do with the brain. All of the brain systems pick up and become alert and more aware and ready and raring to go if that child goes through the struggle of birth in the birth canal. There's something about that struggle that's absolutely necessary, not only for the brain, but also for the lymph, for the endocrine system. It's like the body is awakened fully by that struggle in the birth canal. You take that struggle away, i.e. cesarean, and these children are not necessarily as scrappy or as alert or as go-go oriented or necessarily sometimes even as smart as the kid who has gone through the struggle. But another thing happens, and what we're finding now is that if these children are taken out early by the parents or the doctor's preference, it takes them away from the karmic line of the family. In order to stay in the karmic line of the family, they need to go through the birth the natural way. And this is another, you know, little whoops in the factor here, that if we if we're, you know, going more and more into cesarean births, we're interfering not only with the development of the brain and the various systems in the body, but we're also having problems, we're removing them from the karmic line. So is that a problem? Maybe.
So I'd like for you, there was also the story about the elephants. That was an amazing story. You remember what story I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not sure that I can really paint the picture correctly, but what I remember is that, especially with boys, young male elephants, if there's not an older male around, they will invariably become behavior problems, butting heads with each other, picking fights, getting in trouble, making all kinds of decisions or movements that cause, you know, all kinds of breakages, breakdowns, getting in problems. But if you bring in an older male elephant, right away the young guys start to settle down. And they found this true, exactly true, with humans. That if you have problems with your young guys, they're getting into stealing, they're yelling at each other, they're beating each other up, they're joining gangs, bring in the males, bring in the older males, and we're finding that these boys are starting to settle down and turn around. You need the male. You need that older male. So I'm saying, remember what we've learned from the elephants. It's true with people.
So you also talk in your book, there's a whole chapter, you're talking about the fifth world children, but we need to know what the fifth world means. So you talk about Incredible Fives, the fifth world, the fifth root race, the fifth element, the fifth dimension, the fifth chakra, the fifth brain, five types of intelligence. You know, I can go on and on. You've got a whole list. Can you talk about that, please? The fifth brainwave sequence.
When you're talking about the fifth root race and the fifth world and all these fives, you're going into esoteric traditions. And it doesn't matter which tradition you follow or which folklore you're looking at or mythology you're looking at, they all talk about the human being, the genetics of the human being changing in particular cycles, broad, huge, changing cycles, that we began more like astral beings. We weren't necessarily that physical or that solid. We didn't have that much mass. That was the first root race. And the first root race, R-O-O-T, root meaning the basic DNA or gene pool, that pattern of evolution occurring in that particular patterning of the Earth plane, what was going on Earth with weather, with the changes on the Earth itself. We're finding a match between the people and the kind of world they had to live in. Of course you do. That's just plain evolution. That's just plain genetics. You know, when the world changes, our reality changes, then we as human beings match those changes with what we're able to do, and our own particular characteristics and behavior. So when we're looking at maybe these esoteric traditions, we're looking at something that really does make a certain amount of sense. Now, if you look at the various the traditions of the Mayan calendar or the various traditions of the yugas, which is the more of a Hindu or Vedic way of looking at things, if you look at these various calendars or these various ways of sort of scoping out the various realities or worlds that existed, then you come forward in time. And what I'm seeing when we look at this is a lot of emphasis on fives. It's right up your kazoo. When people are talking about the indigo children, that's supposedly a sixth root race pattern for the sixth world. Well, you look at, you know, the higher intuition is the fifth root race, not the sixth. And you look at the patterning, the physiological patterning and behavior and characteristic patterning of these kids, they all match the fifth root race. If you look at our world now, that's also matching. And the matches and comparisons are these incredible fives. You know, what we're seeing with these new kids is that the big jump occurs, I'm saying around 1982, but you can go back in time. You know, this kind of pattern really existed at the time of Jesus. Not that many people had it, but a few did. You can recognize this pattern at every Renaissance the world has ever known, whether it be the European Renaissance or any other Renaissance in the world. You see a cluster of this particular patterning coming in. That's what caused or developed or enabled the Renaissance to occur. Then you saw this particular now pattern that we have coming in the 1800s, especially before the Civil War, in about the 1840s, when you go back and you're looking at the new thought. Now, I'm not talking New Age here. I'm talking the new thought movement with Troward and Ernest Holmes and Charles Fillmore and some of these incredibly great thinkers that came out of the late 1800s. Those were all fifth root race types. You didn't see that many more until about the 1960s, 1970s. But the big, huge clusters, as far as I'm concerned, the floodgates opened wide, worldwide, in the early 80s. And in 1982, interestingly enough, that's when the personal computer came on the market. And if you look from the 80s on, that's where you see these huge jumps of fives. We now know that there are five brains, if you want to call it that way. The heart is a brain. That's our fifth brain. It's the heart. They've just discovered that. They've just discovered all kinds of things, including, for instance, brainwave frequencies. We now have five, the gamma rays, and they're making all these kinds of discoveries. The five basic forces, that we now have a fifth one. We had electromagnetism, gravity, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. Now we have torsion waves. All these fives are coming in. And to me, that underscores the esoteric traditions that are saying, yes, this is the fifth world. This is where we move into unity consciousness. This is where we're moving into these incredible inventions. And with medicine, with fuel, with, you know, these incredible jumps in what we're able to do and invent to help society.
So
I see that Irvin Laszlo is one of your one of the people that endorsed your book.
Yes.
And just today, Irvin sent me, he's going to come on my show in a couple of weeks.
Oh, you lucky duck!
I love him. He was one of the people that endorsed my book, too. I just adore that man. But he's written an article that's going to come out in the New Dawn magazine early next week. So I want to read you, I can't disclose the whole thing, obviously, since it hadn't come out yet, but I want to read you the first sentence, because it's talking about, it's a message to the young people of the world, your chance to change the world. And he's talking about these children, so I'd like to do this because I want parents to understand how critical it is for them to read your book and to understand why they must parent these children a certain way and why these kids are important. And it's basically, you, the young people of today, are the most privileged people who have ever lived on this earth. For the first time in history, one generation, your generation, holds the key to the greatest challenge of our species has faced since it has proudly named itself Homo sapiens. This challenge, let me go down and find it. You face the challenge of profound and timely change because the world of your fathers and forefathers have created is not sustainable. Unsustainable means that if this world doesn't change, it will break down. It cannot keep going, and it is up to you to save us. Save it for us. Save it for your children. Save it for your grandchildren. And it's up to this set of children to do it.
Right.
So maybe if you, we've got about 20 minutes, 25 minutes left, and I'm going to leave you with that important thought, and I'm going to let you go and talk about whatever you want to talk about, tell these parents how to deal with these children, tell the world how to deal with these children, because they are the people to save this world, because it can't sustain itself anymore.
And they're going to do it as a group. They're not individualists. They're groupies. Okay, parents, do not be shocked or upset by their psychic ability. Take it in stride as natural and normal. Do not be upset by their ability to occasionally know the future. Be objective and detached. Maintain control and discipline through cleverness, not punishment. Bargain, negotiate, and compromise. Keep them busy with chores, no payment. Keep them busy with projects, crafts, trips, volunteerism, especially at senior citizen centers, gardens, care for animals, cookies molded by hand, food sculpture. Give an allowance. 40% goes in savings. Make sure the passbook is in their hands in their room. 40%, it's whatever, for whatever it is they desire. 10% is spiritual. And, you know, they donate to whatever spiritually turns them on. And the last 10% is long-term savings like retirement. So 40% goes in the savings account, 40% for whatever they want, 10% spiritual donation, the last 10% long-term savings like retirement. Establish firm rules of the turf. Parents have quiet rooms. Kids have quiet rooms. Privacy is earned. Teach ethics, questioning, anger management, and philosophy, and start teaching it early. The first grade is not too early, certainly by the third grade. The earlier the better, and keep it up. Encourage entrepreneurship. These kids can have their own business when they're in grade school, make their own products, and learn marketing. Limit television, computers, Game Boys, cell phones, digital devices. None of this up to the age of 2, really restricted up to the age of 3, and 4, you can start introducing it now pretty much between 3 and 4, especially watching television, this kind of thing. But make sure that you limit it. And you can increase that the older they get. They can have more time until the age of puberty. So you want to have rules and limits and really kind of a good discipline where it comes to using these kinds of tools and devices up until puberty. After puberty, they can handle it a lot better. But I'm going to put a little aside here. What we've found in research is that if kids have unbridled use of digital devices up to the age of puberty, the first thing they lose is their ability to abstract. If I were going to say that the guess or state what their greatest talent is, I would say it is their ability to abstract, and that's what they lose with too much undisciplined digital devices. So watch that up until the age of about puberty. Let's see here. They must verify their own truth. So these kids have to work at this. They have to verify. Embrace the spiritual. Exercise together. Say grace before meals. Pray. Contemplate. A tolerance. Introduce them to interfaith religious practices. Watch their sugar levels. Oh, please, please, please. Nutrition, food allergies, digestion. Fungus in the home, big deal. Toxic metals and insulation in the home. Touch a lot. Love pets, family gatherings. Celebrate. Have rituals. These kids, you know, I've had a lot of parents say, you know, how do I handle this? How do I handle that? And one of the first things I say is respect fingers and toes. You got to get them busy. So things like gardening, sewing, if they're making cookies, have them mold them with their own hands. Food sculpture, you know, this book, Play With Your Food. And that's the title of the book, will teach you how to do food sculpture. It's fun. Get these kids busy. If you get them busy doing natural things and get them outdoors, that takes away a lot of the addiction to digital devices. It takes away a lot of the problems in handling these kids. They need silence under no condition. Should a child ever take a cell phone to bed with them, there should be no digital devices in their bedroom at all. Whether they use it or not, they're getting bombarded by that incoherent energy. What we're finding now with digital devices, yes, you know, they get a lot of coordination. Yes, they learn to juggle with the brain. Yes, in some ways it makes them smarter, but in very big ways it makes them dumber. What we're seeing now is that children are losing the ability to reason. They're losing the ability, the old-fashioned practical ability of figuring things out themselves. They're
okay,
losing language.
The ability to write.
Yes. Well, hey, the schools are doing all of this because they're taking away cursive training. They no longer teach writing in school, dear. Did you know that?
Even printing. I mean,
because of these computer things, I mean, my son, he's 12 years old, and we've had this problem with him writing because he's too lazy to want to use a pencil.
Yeah.
And they can't write, can't read anything they write. The problem,
guess what
you know?
Else they can't read. They can't read emotions on a person's face or their voice.
Yeah, and no boundaries.
Yeah.
A person's energetic boundaries.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is diet with these children. I had my little boy, Derek, is very awake. He literally sees the world holographically. He sees things made up of tiny dots. So, he has friends over, and I'm very conscious of his diet, and he had a little sleepover the other night, and the mother calls me at 9 o'clock at night and says, my little boy just called and wants me to bring them Cokes. He says there's nothing to drink at your house. And I said, well, we have water. And we have lemonade made with stevia. And she goes, no, they want Cokes. And do you mind? And I went, well, actually, yes, I mind. Because why do I want to give my kids caffeine and sugar at 9 o'clock at night, not to mention the rest of the time? And she said, well, I'll just come pick them up then. I went, you're going to come and pick them up from spending the night at 9:30 at night because he can't have sugar and caffeine?
Yeah.
And she sat there. People don't realize what they're doing to their children.
No, they don't.
Talk about diet, and can you talk about, do these children have, and we've got about 18 minutes, do these children, are they more prone to sickness than other children? Are they more prone to wellness? Could you give us a little bit of insight on that?
You know, it just depends. We've got a lot of these kids coming in with serious chronic problems. A lot of them are coming in crippled. A lot of them are coming in with learning disorders. So these kids are coming in with a lot of heavies. And yes, we do have to watch, the sugar levels and the food. But it's different with different kids. So I'm saying overall, watch the sugar levels. We need to watch, certainly, the type of food that they're eating, the type of liquids that they're drinking, but it's different with different kids. But yes, stay away from, Cokes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just liquid sugar. And, that's a real problem. But one of the things I'm noticing here with these kids, if you look at the stats, and I do, I read a lot of journals and I keep up with this, we're having movements now happening across the world in thirds. We've got one-third of the kids worldwide who take the standard IQ test. One-third of them are testing out between 150 to 160 scores. It used to be, if you talk to a teacher, they'll say, well, around 130 is genius level, maybe 135. We've got kids coming, one-third, with no genetic marker to account for. They're coming in, testing out 150 to 160. Even the learning disabled. If you take these kids with autism or they say learning disorders, and you give them the Raven's test, which tests fluid intelligence, instead of the Wechsler test, which tests crystallized intelligence, one-third of the kids with autism and learning disorders are testing out 150 to 160 also. Another third are, certainly heads above what we used to have. They're certainly smarter, they're more creative, They're these wonderful entrepreneurs. And one-third are coming in or turning to violence. So we've got the thirds here. If you're looking at the learning disorders, two-thirds of the kids with autism are male, one-third female. It reverses with dyslexia. We don't have all of the stats yet with the girls, but what they're noticing is that about one-third of the kids with dyslexia are girls and one-third are boys. You know, we're looking at thirds. Most of the downturns and uplifts that are occurring now with evolution and in our world today and with genetics are happening in thirds. Eva, that's the rule of thirds. The rule of thirds is the universal pattern of order and harmony. This tells me that what is happening in the world today is right on track. We are on schedule. What is happening is maybe supposed to happen, going to happen. We're on schedule. Maybe there is a greater plan after all. These kind of figures, these thirds, have been consistent for over a decade. And that is huge.
That's kind of scary a little bit. I mean, it's enlightening, but kind of scary a little bit to see it all right here in front of our face in numbers to me. So how do we, these children, and I have seen this too, this anger management problem, how do we deal with that as a society?
You got to start, first of all, in school. At least I think you do.
Because we can't discipline children anymore. You know, you go to jail or something. So what kind of discipline or consequences work best for these children?
Especially get the book Beyond the Indigo Children, because I have a whole chapter in there on how to deal with the anger. I think I talk about it also in Children of the Fifth World, but you need to start teaching anger management and mediation skills beginning in grade school. These little kids are not too young to learn this. And certainly from the fourth grade on, I would say from the third grade on, enact honesty codes and class courts. Kids can investigate the problem themselves, listen to all the people involved, discern what the problem is, they vote, and they carry out their decisions in a fair manner. And they do this very well. Special sessions on dealing with class bullies and the best type of defense to use. You know, you need to instigate timeout, discussion periods. Use respectful language around these kids, even when arguing. That makes a big difference. Of course, we honor good nutrition, exercise, fresh air, play. Get them busy. Engage them in sports, music, marching, and dance. That really helps. And
I have another question, too. One thing that I've noticed is that the children today do not respect authority. So
no, they don't.
How do you get...
They're completely irreverent.
Irreverent. How does society get the message to these children?
You got to bargain. You got to bargain and negotiate. What I'm seeing again and again and again is listen to your children. Sit down and listen to them and discuss things out. And ask them, engage them in the conversation and say, well, what would you like to do about this? What do you think is the best route we should take here? Because, you know, this is the rules of the house. This is how we need to do things. How do you think would be the best way to handle this. In other words, engage your children. And if you engage them in the process of living and handling the house, you'll be surprised at how good they are. And you know, they can figure these things out, and they can be very cooperative, but you've got to start young, and you've got to listen to these kids and respect them as males and females, human beings. They've got to be a part of this, and you've got to stick with it. You've got to stick with that type of discipline.
Okay, so we've got about 3 minutes. Do you want to talk about, I'd like for you to tell us about your other books, where we can find you,
well,
and
please,
what you
please.
Personally have to say to these children, because they are the wings of the subtle butterfly that can cause a tsunami on the other side of the world.
Yeah. Well, again, on my website, which is www.pmhatwater.com, you know, all lowercase one word, pmhatwater.com, I have a free monthly newsletter. You can subscribe on my website. Please do. I have all kinds of different things on that newsletter. Yeah, what could I say to these kids? The biggest thing I can say to these kids is to get out that door and sit down on the dirt and hug a tree or lay down in the dirt or get with the grass, or you got to get outside. You got to get outside.
What about family? You know, so I force my children on Friday nights to be at my dinner table. But I'm about the only one, and I'm mean because I do it.
Well, I don't know that you have to force to.
Well, it's just a rule. Like, that's a better way to put it.
But get them involved. Have them help to decorate the table. The table should always have a centerpiece, whether it's flowers or candles or whatever. And maybe they can make something. Have them set the table. Have them help make the food or prepare the food. And have them, you know, you go around the table and you say some kind of grace. That's so important that they recognize that there's a higher authority here. There's a greater intelligence, and they're part of that. Get them involved with that. You know, our children, evolution's not is stacking the deck, and it's forcing us to find ways of living beyond the struggle and crush of polarities. And our kids are, you know, they're in league now with this situation at hand. They're arriving as if their DNA is encoded to tackle all of these problems that we have. We're really literally involved right now, as near as I can see, with the end of, it's the end of things we are now witnessing. It's like the ultimate battle between good and evil. And the children are prepared for this. We've come to this, a chance to start over and rewrite history. And these kids are what is going to enable us to do this. And because they're groupies, because they're irreverent, they're not going to buy the old package. They're just not going to buy it. They're coming in with new ways of doing things. And they're coming in at a time when the whole earth is changing. Let's look just quickly at the homogenocene. You know, we had our first one with Columbus 5 centuries ago. When Columbus came over, it wasn't just Columbus, it's what all came with all these things that came with him, all the rats, all the bugs, all malaria, all these other things he brought with him. And he literally changed the entire globe. The studies on that are just overwhelming. Okay, that's a homogenocene. He opened up the entire world, the East and West. Now we're moving into oneness, unity, consciousness. And guess
okay,
what?
We have to.
It's our second genocene.
We have to kind of wrap up here, so I want to say, because it's on the hour and I let it run too long.
Okay.
Please, everybody, take a look at PMH's new book, Children of the Fifth World. It's a great book. Please take a look at my new book. It's called Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics. And it's not over your head. I wrote it for the average person because that's exactly what I am. Also, kids, there are other kids out there like you. If you want to connect, I'm actually building a list of people who contact me on my radio show or lectures I give that are young people that want to connect with other young people. Email me, evaher@gmail.com, and I'll connect you. You'll have other people like you to connect with and bond with and talk to. Also, sign up for my friend Cynthia Sue Larson's Reality Shifters monthly magazine. It's in PMH's book, and it's a great one. And she also has a new book, Reality Shifters, Consciousness Shapes Reality. Isn't that what it is, PMH?
She's good. Anything Cynthia does is wonderful.
Yeah, she's great. So thanks for joining us tonight, PMH, and I love your book, and I know everybody else will, and I hope you'll come back again. Good night.
Bye-bye.